Commander Ryan Zinke. We'll look forward to chatting with him, and he'll be facing a different Congress as well. There's still no indication. And I've got John Olson standing by. I don't want to wait too long here, but I wanted to get that news out because that just broke moments ago that they finally called that race. They really could have called it. I ran the numbers yesterday afternoon. When you look at the precincts that were yet to be counted, and Commander Zinke's lead had risen past the point of even if 100% of those remaining ballots came out and they were all for, Democrat Trinnell, she still had no path to victory. And I don't know why they delayed so long, but that's where we're at. Anyway, so again, congratulations and thanks to Ryan thanks to Monica for running in the race there, throwing your hat in the ring, and to all who have done that. Let's welcome John Olson now. I don't know if I talked enough, and let me set the stage here, too, before we get into it. And John and I have been acquaintances for a long time and really appreciate, and we've chatted off the air here, too. He served in the Navy as an electronic specialist from 61 to 65. That was the time during the Cuban Missile Crisis. But, between 1963 and 1969, the U.S. military carried out this series of classified tests. They called it Project Shad because it was shipboard hazard and defense is what it was. And there were multiple agencies involved, but mostly it was the U.S. Navy and some Marine Corps service members. This project was to evaluate the vulnerabilities of U.S. Navy ships to chemical and biological warfare agents. And this was, again, in the early 60s and mid-60s when there was a serious threat. There was just there were two superpowers, right? You remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. You had Russia, and then you had the United States. And they were just – it was the genesis of the Cold War here as well. And if you dig into this a little bit, you'll understand that there was the same kind of processing and testing going on by our enemies. And so, from a military standpoint, there was concern there. So the military launched these tests, and it involved the use of active chemicals and biological agents. There were other things that they were testing because they just wanted to examine the vulnerabilities to chemical and biological warfare. We live in that kind of world. And so, simulants, tracers, decontaminants, there were roughly just under 6,000 military personnel that were involved in Project Shad testing. Again, it took until 2000 until the military publicly disclosed this. It took pressure. It took pressure by our Congress, our elected leaders, by the volunteers in nonprofit organizations to get this out from underneath the covers so that these Shad veterans can get some care. Let's take it from there as we welcome John Olson to the program here. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good, sir.
I'm glad. Go ahead.
The start of getting over that was when the Twin Towers went up in New York.
Oh, gotcha. That's when they really started to push recognition and treatment for the Shad veterans?
No, that's when they first allowed us to talk.
Oh, really? See, I've got it here that it was disclosed in 2000.
Well, it was 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Well.
I remember 9/11.
That
afternoon, they had a one-inch blurb in a Northern Virginia paper, and that started the whole thing.
What was your, and I want to talk about your experiences there, but let's go with that. What was your thought as a veteran who served on these ships that it took this long? Were you dealing at that time too with some disabilities?
No disabilities that I know of.
At that time, no. Yeah. Do you have any service related injuries?
Yeah. More than a few.
Yeah. And they've traced that back to
your kidney. And
Go ahead, John. I want you to tell your story.
I'm missing a kidney now, an adrenal gland, and there isn't sundry things from starting there. But when we were in the Project Shad, it was an all-service organization, Air Force, Marines, Army, Navy, the whole bit, Coast Guard. And as I understood it, most of the alphabet soup intelligence people out of Washington, D.C. had it handling it, too, watching those of us who were involved with it, making sure we didn't talk to somebody we shouldn't.
Yeah.
But this is the same time that Russia had a problem with a spill. They were manufacturing anthrax deals in somewhere in central Russia. And there's still an area of central Russia about the size of, about half the size of North Dakota that is untenable. They can't go in there.
So, did you know, did they keep information from you at that time, John?
We did not know exactly what we were inoculated against. We did not know what elements were coming at us during the night. We sampled at night because sunshine killed the biological weapons. Most people don't know that. It's a good thing to remember, though.
Wow. Yeah. I bet they've gone beyond, though. Nowadays. And this was early. So when you became a part of this program, how much information did the military put forward for you? And as you and I had chatted, this was quite a while ago, and I remember talking, because this is when, you know, the vaccine mandate came out for the military, and obviously, you know, you had concerns about that because you've been through that program. And I know you want to talk about that, and that's okay. How aware were you that you were being used in this testing? As you had said earlier, you accepted this as a soldier doing this for your country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounded like a good deal. And we had five boats, tugboats, that we manned. The Navy manned the Army tugboats. You know, we had 10-man crew that serviced the tug. And then we had the sampling crew, which was another five or six people. And not all of them were servicemen. We had some other people involved with that. So went from there. The orders coming out for getting us to those operations were not, you could not refuse, but you could be offered a way out if you wanted to. And that happened in a closed meeting, and one at a time. And those, I don't know of many people that opted out because it sounded good. Sounded like something that should be done. You know, looking back on it, maybe not. But with all the problems that we've had with it, since 2001, they set up a task force on weapons of mass destruction in Washington, D.C., through the DVA. And I was allowed to come in and join the group, which made for a small group that had been involved basically worldwide with the testing. I was only involved out of Hawaii. And so I didn't get to travel too much for it. But interesting, Alaska was part of it, England, Australia. And so it was an international operation. Right now, the commander of the Russian intelligence unit that was working on this is a resident of the United States, has written a book on this from his perspective. And they're different. They had complete medical care right at the start. We didn't get any noticeable medical care until the task force got going. And we got some rules in there about the payment for services. Excuse me. But with that came knowledge of what was going on. And we had officers and enlisted people that were part of it. And we would meet in Washington, D.C., behind closed doors, spend a weekend there. So in my many trips to Washington, D.C., I haven't seen anything yet.
Oh, really?
I've seen the inside of the conference room.
Oh, that's too bad, because it's really a city that is worth walking around and seeing the sights on. Hey, John, stand by, because I want to go more into this, too, and then get some thoughts as well on, you know, when you saw this COVID-19 vaccine mandate, it probably brought back a lot of memories, and I remember us talking about that, too. We honor our veterans. We'll have some notices out today about veteran celebrations. You can text me yours at 781-627-5483. Back with more Voices in a bit.
General season is here, and in 2022, Montana FWP is continuing CWD, chronic wasting disease, surveillance across Montana. If you harvest a deer, elk, or moose in these surveillance areas, please stop at a CWD sampling station. And to find a sampling station, please visit the FWP website. For information about getting your animal tested for free by FWP, proper carcass disposal, and assistance with sampling your animal, visit fwp.mt.gov/CWD.
On the Northern News Network, Tom Schultz alongside Ryan Zinke has been declared now the winner of the Western District congressional seat. That's Montana District 1. It took a long time to make that determination, but that is breaking news here today. Monica Trinnell, the Democratic challenger in that race, will be making an announcement shortly here, as a matter of fact, and that'll take place across the state. We're with John Olson as we're talking about, again, honoring our veterans. We have a special Veterans Day program tomorrow. I want to get a couple of notes out here, John, and then we'll get right back into it. But and Ed McIntosh will join us a bit later on. Maybe we'll talk weather, but we're going to talk about Lonnie Bell as well, a longtime friend with Ed McIntosh. They shared the same Sunday studio, which is right next to us here for decades. Their country music classic Sunday morning program. It's really, really a good show. Anyway, he'll be hosting a ceremony for Veterans Day at 10 a.m. Tomorrow. That'll be at Lockwood High School Performing Arts Center near Billings. And Senator Tester is going to be at that one. Also, I get this from my friend Susan in the Missoula area on a yearly basis, and I know she's big in this and appreciate her for that. The 96th Annual Veterans Day Ceremony will take place at the Missoula County Courthouse inside the rotunda. Usually it's outside by the Doughboy statue, but it's been the weather's not been cooperating, so that's going to take place at 11 a.m. tomorrow as well. And if you would like to text me your service celebration or commemoration, do that at 781-627-5483. Back with John Olson here again, a electronic specialist with the Navy. He served there from 1961 to 1965 and on a mission that we now know as Project Shad, Shipboard Hazard and Defense, where American soldiers and sailors were exposed to chemical and biological warfare agents. Again, during a program 1963 to 1969, height of the Cold War, just to test those vulnerabilities. And as we have seen, there have been some reactions from that. And it took us a long time to get that out. In fact, this is almost like 50 years ago, right? When you're looking right at when this happened, John. Give us your thoughts on this vaccine mandate that was struck down, thankfully. But when it came out, did you go back on that ship all over again?
Not on the ship.
Well, you know what I mean. Did your mind take you back to the ship, or what was your thoughts?
Yeah, see, I got to know the guy who put our inoculations together. and tested them and all that kind of stuff. And he did a bang-up job. Now, he died as a result of it because he tested everything on himself. So he had cancer of the left shoulder when he died. But he made no mistakes that I know of on the inoculations. Now, a friend of mine, a college roommate, in fact, from before, was an Air Force flight officer, B-52 pilot. And he blamed the shots that they had on his ill health. Now, I didn't know that at the time that the Air Force was using those shots for that. But he's not available for me to talk to anymore, so
right.
I just have to go by what I can. Go back a little bit further in my history. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, the U.S. sent a convoy of Marines to Panama Canal and then on to Cuba. I was on a Second World War destroyer in San Diego, and we were the flagship for the screen on the convoy. We took them down to Panama and let them off, but that's the first time that my electronics didn't work out for me. The powers that be shut down most of our communications equipment, our outgoing communications, which is where I was working, and I didn't have a job for about 3 hours. And it was on 6 hours on, 6 hours off, Combat Information Center, main radar, so I knew where everything was in the whole thing. So just to keep you going in there. Then the orders came through for the project, and they were the dream machine from Jack Kennedy. He's the one that wanted it. And so we were all ordered in, and then he was assassinated, and Lyndon Johnson would not get us started. So we went from six crews for five boats down to one crew for all five boats. And I stayed with the unit and just took it out. And finally, when Johnson was elected and installed as president, inaugurated, then he released us to go to work. And we did that, and that put me a few weeks behind, well, a couple weeks behind, getting back to college. So that's where I was when we found out that we were not supposed to talk to anybody. We're not supposed to leave the lower 48 states. We're not supposed to do this. We're not supposed to do that. And all in all, it's been kind of a sit-down life since then.
Yeah.
I went back to college after I got out of the service, and finally got a degree in business. I was tired of going to school, so I didn't pursue anything else, even though if things had worked out, I could have gotten an economics degree or electrical engineering degree.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't work out quite that way, so got my business degree, went off to Texas and worked in the heavy construction, engineering and construction company, and ended up as a senior purchasing agent. But 10 years building oil refineries and nuclear reactors and all kinds of things like that, including an Anheuser-Busch brewery.
So. Well, bless your heart for that. I'm serious. When did you start feeling the effects of the experimentation that you were put through? And when did you recognize, and I know you're talking with folks, when did you recognize that it was because of those inoculations?
About 10 years after I got out of the service, my blood pressure went up. And my doctor looked at it, changed my, or gave me some pills to put on, and my blood pressure went down. 3 days later, it was back up higher than it had been before. We went through that about 4 or 5 times. Different medications, different strengths, and all that. And all in all, it took about 6 years to figure out what was going on. I had an adrenal tumor. One of my adrenal glands had gone tumor, and I was hyper. So, and we finally got that taken care of. And since then, I've had various and sundry things as a result of what the adrenal gland does or didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been cut on a few times.
And John Olson is with us again, a Navy electronic specialist, was part of the Project SHAD shipboard hazard and defense program. John, I don't want to, we're going to run out of time. I'm going to skip the headlines and we got like 3 minutes left here. How is the VA treating you now? I know it took quite a while. There was some studies done in 2007 that really opened up the door. It took legislation, a lot of pressure from Congress and other advocates. How is the VA treating you now?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I'm on home health care. That means the doctor comes out to see me. So.
Good.
Yeah. And pretty much going along on that. No complaints in that area. Consequently, you know, I'd like to have a lot of the things that I don't have now. Of course, I'm a few days older than I was before, so my strength is not what it should be. So that's about the main thing I have.
Where's your heart at as a Project SHAD veteran? And I think as we chatted, what impressed me was, I'll let you say it because I don't want to put words in your mouth, but You understood the dangers at the time, but also understood the enemy.
Yes, yes. We understood the dangers in a general way, not in a specific way.
Yeah.
From the different biological weapons that were being used. They have different purposes and different modes of doing it. But it depends on what you want to do.
Do you carry a grudge?
No. No, I don't.
How did you manage that? How did you manage not to carry a grudge?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Ask your question, I can answer.
We got 1 minute. Is there anything else that you wanted to say, John?
Basically, that's about it. Congratulations to Mr. Zinke.
Uh-huh.
Been watching that myself, so...
Well, John, I thank you for your service, and I appreciate our conversations because they're valuable to me, and I really appreciate the fact that when you lived in that moment, and as someone who was dedicated to their country, accepted some of those risks, you should have been more informed. I know, and I'm sorry that has happened in that regard, and I'm glad that the truth finally came out. You've made an ultimate sacrifice in a lot of ways, John Olson, and we appreciate you for it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I look forward to chatting with you down the road, too, okay? Stay in touch.
Okay.
All right.
Yep, will do.
Happy Veterans Day to John Olson, and you as well. Thank you all. Take a break. Ed McIntosh will come on back. Lonnie Bell's gone. We'll keep talking about him.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
As we pay tribute to our nation's heroes during Veterans Month, AARP Montana wants to thank all those in uniform, along with their families, for their service and sacrifice. As a way of expressing gratitude for defending our freedom, AARP has set up a special free resource site dedicated to Montana veterans and military families, because veterans often face a unique set of challenges as they age or retire. Find this special free resource site online at aarp.org/mtvets.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
Thanks again for being here. Hope you're just out there and kicking it on a Thursday. Man, traffic was slow today, wasn't it? But thank you for driving wisely, driving like you've driven before in the snow in Montana. And also thanks for our veterans. You know, we're paying tribute. It's Veterans Month, and AARP wants to acknowledge these veteran heroes. All those who have served, there's a sacrifice that goes with that. And AARP Montana is saluting nonprofit organizations, too. This is a great mission here when you talk about helping in unique ways for veterans. AARP is recognizing Brock Shepherd's Four Veterans. That's out of Phillipsburg, Montana. They offer pups and service dogs and emotional support and training free to qualifying veterans in the southwestern Montana area. Look them up for more information or visit aarp.org/mtvets. Tough to talk about this next one, except for the fact that he always, when you think about him and chat with him, warmed your heart in a lot of ways. Lonnie Bell, a gentleman well known in across Montana, he is certainly a legend, voted to the Country Music Disc Jockey Hall of Fame, launched the career of Loretta Lynn, and there's more stories. And Ed McIntosh joins us now, meteorologist. I don't even need, everybody knows Ed, and Ed's been the host of and with Lonnie for how many years, Ed? And thanks for being here. I appreciate that. How many years did you and Lonnie do the show next door?
Well, you know, Lonnie and I worked, it was actually kind of off and on for a while. I first met Lonnie and started working with him at the same station back in the mid-80s, and we just kept working back and forth for a while, and, you know, we'd end up working for the same radio group, and then we'd be apart, and then back again, and we spent some time together here at towards the end of his career. He finally retired. Lonnie had the longest retirement program, I think, of anybody. Back in 1985, he started a Sunday morning program, and this is after he'd already, as you mentioned, been so instrumental in the careers of Loretta Lynn, Charlie Pride. He actually introduced Alabama at their first showcase in Nashville because he was one of those Billboard reporters who recognize their talent. So, I mean, we're talking generations of country performers that owe at least part of their career to Lonnie Bell, right from Montana.
What was he like?
Lonnie was a great storyteller, and he had an amazing memory for details. And in fact, I got to tell this story. We were doing a live broadcast, and we're talking on the air, and his phone starts to ring. I got to remember Lonnie, you know, by that point, he was in his 80s, and the phone starts to ring. So he's got it cranked up all the way, so he knows what his phone is ringing. We can't ignore it. We're on the air. So he answers the phone while we're talking on the air, and it's Charlie Pride on the phone who called to ask about a meeting that they had. They had played together. And then they'd gone to a guy's house here at Billings and had spent the evening playing music into the wee hours of the morning. And Charlie called up to try and remember all the people that were there. So we're sitting here on the air live, and here's Charlie Pride calling Lonnie to discuss old memories, you know, during that broadcast. But he just had that great retention for all of those great details, whether it was stories about country music stars or whether it was about his time in the military, which he took a lot of pride in, and had a lot of great stories to talk about that.
And that's another aspect of this. And he's written a book, and there's several chapters regarding that. And we had a chance to catch up with him a couple of years ago now. 98 years before he finally fell here. And again, condolences out to the family. I mean, it's hard, but also, there's a lot of love and celebration in his life as well. But talk about, you know, how often that military career, like you said, he was very proud of it. How often and how did he approach it in terms of telling stories about it?
For me personally, Lonnie and I would do this country music show every Sunday morning from 8 until noon. So our routine was to get together at about 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'd make a pot of coffee, and he would tell stories. And whether that was about country music stars, something that happened with him, he was a great scholar of country music. So often he would just tell me stories about things he had learned. But to a good extent, it was personal experiences. And he would just go back in time and revisit these great stories about people that he knew. And, you know, he had been touched by so many. You think of some of the major battles, especially in the Pacific, he was involved with. And he was in the Navy, and he was a mechanic for airplanes, and would work and was stationed in quite a few different places. So a lot of it was just these personal insights about what the day-to-day life was like dealing with that in the Pacific Theater, and these amazing stories of courage in so many cases, and you could tell the lifetime-changing, life-changing events for him that really, I think, helped influence him to become the person that he was later on. I mean, like so many people that we know from World War II became so involved in their community. He was huge with March of Dimes. He did an annual horseback ride to raise funds while he was he had his radio career in Billings. And it just influenced, I think, so much the kind of person he was once he got out of the military.
You should talk about Ed McIntosh is with us as well. You should talk about that ride. Tom Thumb, right, was the horse?
That's right, Tom Thumb. And he had made Lonnie had a lot of friends in the area. He couldn't meet Lonnie and not enjoy his company. He just had an infectious smile and a great storytelling. He was originally from West Virginia and just had a bit of that drawl to his voice that was just compelling. He had these great old these great sayings that he would use to describe situations. You know, one of our local DJs, you know, he always used to tease her that she was corn fed and hand spanked, you know, and that was just the way that he would describe people. Or so he had made friends with some folks that of course were into ranching, but a lot of that and real estate. And so they had offered to let him ride this horse, and it became, and eventually they just said, you know what, we're just going to let you have Tom Thumb. And that the horse became almost as famous as Lonnie for a lot of years, and they would make this annual ride from around Reed Point into Billings in order to raise funds for March of Dimes. And it became something I think that people look forward to and that they associated with that charity for a long time. It really helped bring awareness for the March of Dimes here in southern Montana.
Lonnie Bell, again, I don't know if you describe him as a character, but very affable in a lot of ways. Touched the lives of some country music giants, really, when you talk about Charlie Pride, call him and say, Lonnie, what's up? And then launching the career of Loretta Lynn. I think that story is worth retelling too, Ed.
Yes, right. Lonnie was in Washington State, and he was playing with a band, and he was looking for a singer. And he went out, and he happened to hear Loretta Lynn singing, and he immediately recognized the talent that she had. And so his weekend band, he managed to get Loretta Lynn to be the singer for his band. And then when Loretta and Mooney had their first record cut, because of his experience with radio and with recording and knowing people, explained to them how to get that record out, you know, to go to these radio stations, to interact with the DJs, because back in those days, that's how you got your radio on the air. You went to DJs, you made friends with them, you offered, you know, you brought your record with you, and you hoped that they liked it enough that they wanted to share it with their audience. And that's exactly what Loretta did, and helped get her first record played on the air and helped to launch her career. In fact, years later, when Lonnie actually had a bronze statue that was dedicated here in Billings, there was a letter from Loretta who said that her career probably wouldn't have happened without Lonnie Bell.
Yeah. And it's kind of amazing to think about that, because there he is. He's looking for a singer. and happens to just sort of stumble upon this. Does he? But he talks about how he knew right at that moment.
Yeah, he recognized, and that was something with Lonnie. He recognized talent, and you know, we think of these major stars, but it was the same way with even local talent. He recognized talent, and he had this innate ability to recognize a great song. So much of what was with Lonnie was his ability to recognize a hit song and know it right away. He also had a great appreciation. So often we were doing the radio show, he would start talking about the sidemen on the record. It wasn't just the star who was singing, but he would know who the steel guitar player was on the particular record because he recognized the talent that went into that as well. There's a lot of local artists that have great affection for Lonnie because he helped try to support them in their careers as well, and them going out, and whether it was just a weekend gig or them trying to promote a record, if Lonnie heard talent, he stepped up to make sure people knew about it.
Ed, I want to talk a little bit about this service that you're hosting tomorrow as well. But I just want any thoughts on Lonnie here, and I know it's tough, but like I said, he warms you up when you think about him. And 98 years old and lived a very, very full life, and would love to still have him around. But anything else you want to share about Lonnie?
Yeah, just that, you know, Montana should be proud that we've got a history in somebody like Lonnie. But on a personal level, he was just such a dear man. He was a sincere friend. If you met him, you liked him. But on the other hand, Lonnie would like you too. He just liked people. He loved conversation, and he appreciated it. There's this amazing talent as somebody, as a musician himself, who recognized the importance of music, and it played such a key role in his life. He's got an amazing library in his home and of music and books. Like I said, he was a scholar of country music. And just a whole room that's almost a shrine because it's just walls and walls of accolades and awards and things that he always took very humbly but was very proud of.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for sharing that. We're going to play a song here from Lonnie in just a little bit, and we're going to go to break. We'll let you go. But I want you to chat about tomorrow because you're going to be the master of ceremonies for a Veterans Day ceremony in the at Lockwood High School, 10 a.m.
Yes, that's right. And as much pride as Lonnie took in being a veteran, I'm glad that I'm able to have the opportunity. In fact, the last time that I was on this stage at Lockwood School, I have a beautiful performing arts center there, was with Lonnie as the Sons of the Pioneers were putting on a concert. And
Lonnie was his old self there, wasn't he?
He sure was.
Yeah.
He was there. He was ready to tell stories. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to being there. We're going to have representatives from the different congressional offices. Senator Tester will be there along with a lot of local folks. But we will have a moment of silence for Lonnie at that tomorrow as well.
Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you doing that as well. Don't appreciate this weather so much, though, Ed.
You know, record cold for so much of the state here in the central and western portions of the state. And as you mentioned, slow down, everybody, for the eastern portion of the state. As this blizzard is moving off into the Dakotas, I'm noticing today that North Dakota has closed down all their state offices.
I'm ready for it. Bring it on. It doesn't matter. I've lived here long enough. I don't like it, but bring it on. Ed, thank you so much. I look forward to chatting with you again, sir.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the invitation, as always.
Take care. Back in a bit.
During big game season, we'd like to remind hunters that respecting private landowners and the access they provide is more important than ever. Positive relationships between hunters and landowners impacts all recreationalists. Please remember, respecting private land and building relationships with landowners protects hunting access opportunities. Hunting private land is a privilege. Ask first to hunt, fish, and recreate on private land and follow ethical fair chase hunting practices. It's up to us. Respect access. Protect the hunt. Visit fwp.mt.gov/it's up to us.
go ahead and hit that song. This is a song written by Mike Morgan, and it's dedicated. It's about Lonnie Bell.
He came from Enterprise in West Virginia. He was born before country came along.
I'm sure Lonnie would get a kick out of this.
He fought for Uncle Sam. He was a Navy man. He knows his way around a country song. Three chords and the truth he loves to talk about. See, he's the king of country radio. From his Sunday morning show on KGHL Radio, when it comes to country music, he's at home. From lefty.
Three chords and the truth. Yeah, it's a good formula. God bless you, Lonnie. Thanks for all the memories, and Marty as well. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. And to all who served, thank you, too. We will be having a special presentation for Memorial Day. We'll be at the Perkins Restaurant, Westside Billings, and be speaking with members of the USS Billings and more. So join us tomorrow for that. Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers, and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.